Welcome to another episode of This Is Your Journey by the Specialist Learning Disability Service. Today I am really excited and really pleased and honoured to have Danny O'Reilly, who is a nurse in the Specialist Learning Disability Service. I'll let Danny introduce her full registration as a nurse. We're going to be talking about a subject which might be quite sensitive to some of our listeners today, as we're going to be thinking about death, grief, and bereavement. So it comes with a bit of a warning to be able to just say to look after yourselves if you feel this is a podcast that you would like to listen to. And it's okay if this podcast isn't right for you at this time to listen to. So just take care of yourselves as we enter into quite a sensitive, but I feel a brave and important conversation to have. So I am going to introduce Danny. Hello, Danny. Thank you so much for coming to join me. Could you start by just sharing with us your professional nurse registration, please?
Yes, I'm a registered sick children's nurse and a registered general nurse. So did the combined training a little while back. I mean, so I've brought that to the team alongside the emotional and mental health needs of the children and young people in our service.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Danny's joined us in a senior community nurse position, and as Danny just shared, to support our young people with their emotional and mental health. What we know, as I've shared in other podcast episodes, is we're really thoughtful about the research and evidence that children and young people with mental health and needs aren't always recognised in the way that they feel they should be. And this is why Danny is incredibly passionate about thinking about grief and bereavement and opening up these conversations for the children with a learning disability. On the 17th to the 23rd of November, it's Children's Grief Awareness Week by the Childhood Bereavement Network. And this year, the week's theme is sharing stories and strengthening hope. Their statement is that we hope that many children and young people feel isolated and lonely, particularly during the initial time after a bereavement. We also know that bereavement does not define who they are, although it can become part of their identity. This year, we want to encourage everyone to share a story about bereavement because we're all affected by bereavement. Grief is hard, but can also give a child or young person insights and resilience they can take through their life. That's why we want these stories to highlight hope too. Recognising that despite bereavement, there are still opportunities and moments to celebrate. We want to encourage children, young people, families, services, organisations, practitioners, managers, and anyone who supports a bereaved child or a young person to get involved. This is your journey, and it's all about hearing from the stories who join me and hope in the future. This ties in with the year's theme of Child Bereavement Network. For our young people that we support, we're really thoughtful about ensuring that we consider them and actually recognise that grief and bereavement does affect them. But how do we even start these conversations? And that's where I'd like to start with yourself, Danny. May I ask, what is grief and bereavement? How would you even explain it?
Grief is a collection of feelings, a powerful mix of emotions that we have when someone or something important to us is lost. This may be sadness, confusion, anger, worry, or even relief. And there is no linear set formula for how that grief is set out. But what we acknowledge is that all these feelings are valid. And then bereavement sees the period of time after death when someone is grieving, and these give a name to what we're feeling so we can find ways to seek and get that support we need. So it can be quite complex, very personal, and a process that helps us heal from that significant loss, whether that be a death or loss in other ways that also causes grief.
That was incredibly put, Danny. Thank you so much. That was, really, really beautifully put. Could I ask, Danny, We're looking specifically for children and young people with a learning disability, and we're thinking of the moderate severe to profound young people who access our service. And I just wondered, why do you think it's important for us to be having these conversations for this particular population of young people?
I think this matters to me and to our team because children and young people with learning disabilities, they're often overlooked in conversations about loss. Sometimes it's assumed that because they do not have the cognitive ability to fully understand what grief means, then they don't need to know. However, we all know that at every level, when we have lost something or when someone has gone, we experience this on all levels. And I think it's to acknowledge that their feelings are no less deep. They may show grief differently and need that tailored support. But I do believe that every child has a right to that honest information, supportive routines, and adults who really can connect with them and support them with the loss of the person or the thing that they have lost.
You said there, Danny, about it can look differently for children and young people with a learning disability. And I just wondering very generally, what could that possibly look like for a young person, do you think? Is it the same as somebody without a learning disability, or do you think it can show up different, or there's a real crossover and very individual?
Yeah, I think it's very individual. However, there are some elements such as tears, perhaps the sadness, the expression of that grief. However, again, that is very varied as it is for all of us. I think for our specific young people, perhaps the changes that are more noticeable are maybe in their behaviour. So perhaps when there's overshadowing of that behaviour is because of it's, yeah, do we actually stop and listen and hear what may be contributing to that behaviour? And it might be that there's increased anxiety, more withdrawal, sleep problems, and some skills that they may have once been able to learn, they may regress a little bit in their ability to be able to do them. And other ways are changing appetite, different sorts of foods. And again, through their body language, you know, I think young people generally convey with their whole bodies about how they're feeling. And for many of us, if we ask or express our grief, it's normally somebody else notices something about us, how we're presenting. So, yeah, for them, it's no different. It's just, I think, really tuning in and connecting with them, having that relationship that identifies and observes those subtle changes. To get to know where their grief may be for them and how that is being expressed.
I think for me a big thing was there what you said is even daring to consider actually a behaviour can be the surface level. Underneath that actually can be grief or bereavement in their own way, and it's important for us to not, like you said, just presume it's a behaviour, actually what's underneath. And if there has been a death or loss, actually a change in behaviour, sleeping, eating is what you said there, is being careful not to overshadow and go, it's a behaviour, actually, like you said, being curious enough and recognising something significant may have happened, but it's coming out in a behaviour way of maybe distress or anxiety or lack of sleep, and it's being mindful that they likely have been affected.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, I think that's very true. And I think that came up for me was about, yeah, that connection, curiosity. I think curiosity comes up a lot for our young people, you know, being open and curious as to what is happening for them. And again, that understanding of how they are conveying their grief. So it may be that the sadness, the emotions that are being expressed, are they how we understand our emotions, or are they expressed in a different way? So I think it's, that's where the relationship and that connection is really important.
Do you think that it can be difficult for people supporting children with a learning disability to think about grief and bereavement, and there might be a want to protect them, so therefore not opening up this conversation about grief and bereavement. And what I'm thinking, protection, but is there other things you think sometimes parents, carers, or people around the young person may find difficult to start thinking about grief and bereavement with them?
Yeah, I think there are some barriers to expressing and exploring that grief, or the barriers to the grief support for our young people. I think there's, like I said, mentioned before, belief that they don't have the ability to fully understand. So maybe that's where, like, do we need to share that? Also, like we said before, the different ways of communication, the sounds that somebody may make, their body expressions. And the fact that if we share being aware of our own emotions, that we don't want a young person to feel the emotions that we're feeling. It may be that they become dysregulated, that their behaviour shows in other ways. And for that reason, it's like, you know, we must just keep everything so that they can manage those emotions. So we deny them the opportunity to learn or hear about the loss for fear of becoming dysregulated.
In your experience of working with young people, and I'm just thinking this would be a good time, I apologise, you've done specialist training, am I correct, in grief and bereavement with children, young people with a learning disability, or as is now being also termed, intellectual disability. Am I correct with that, Danny?
Yes, I've had the opportunity to access some training specifically for the needs of the service users that we see and we work with. So that's been very, supportive.
What difference, where you have worked with young people with a learning disability or intellectual disability, would you say by doing the grief and bereavement work? Again, I appreciate we can talk generally, but just on your reflection work, have you seen benefits of being able to say, I see you, I hear you, and I am going to, if you're ready, to acknowledge grief and adapt to ways to be able to support that young person?
Yes, I think by working, and I think that trust and that therapeutic relationship and that connection are perhaps even more important with our young people, because we have to get to know, again, how they express that. What does that look like for them? How is that emotion for them? And also from a very sensory-based experience of grief and being able to support that. So it might be, I know that some questions have come up for families around, for example, attending funerals. And it's like, will that be too much? Will they understand? Is it appropriate that they're there? And I think those conversations with our young people, finding out ways that they can be involved in the ritual as well. There's that sort of grief ritual, that death ritual that they become a part of. So it may be that they enjoy singing. Can they be joining the singing element, that musical element? Or it may be that they're like, oh, the flowers are too strong, it's too overwhelming, there's too many people. Well, how could that be managed? So it's mitigating those things that become barriers for these young people to access, and really exploring for each individual how that can be. How can we adapt so that they can be part of that grief process and that part of the feeling, for example?
What I hear from what you're saying, Danny, is there isn't this exclusion. It's about how do we adapt? How do we bring that to the young person? So that's what comes through very clearly to me. It's about how do we, but they're going to feel it in whatever way they experience grief and bereavement. So it's about how we do that, and they have the right to be able to, and the support should be there in a way that we adapt and tailor for them.
Yeah, I think also Yes, how we raise our confidence, I think, in having these conversations. I think that's why part of this having this podcast is to initiate those conversations to say it's okay. And also, we're there to support each other in that. And I think people often focus on the person who's died, which is understandable. But also for our young people, other mass losses matter too within that. That loss of that key person, the loss of familiar activities, whether there's loss of routine or just changes to, say, respite arrangements, or with the loss of a pet, that loss of that comfort. So it's for children with sensory routine needs, losing a familiar place or person can be especially destabilizing for them.
Does grief ever end, do you think, Danny? Is there a in 2 weeks' time you feel better from grief, or can it, is it something that can be learned to be lived with, do you think? Is it not about you can put a time on it when you're going to feel better? And can it ever resurface if you find you are feeling differently about the grief? Does it, can it come up again, do you think, for children and young people that we work with?
Yeah, I believe that grief is ongoing. It is our lives that grow around that grief. That grief is always a part of us. And there's the dual process, they call it, the dual process model, where there's the loss and the restoration. So initially, when the young person experiences a loss of any sort, then they are in that loss. They are all encompassed often in that place. And then gradually, moving over to the restoration process, the restoration period. So things or elements that really connect back to life as it is that is meaningful for them as now. But you go between the two. There's times of going through loss and going through restoration. And I think perhaps some extra support is needed for those young people, maybe particularly in our service users that may become stuck in that loss and need that support to actually restore again the lives and activities they once had. So I believe it is that, yeah, you're in each element and transitions through life. It might be birthday, or it might be later in life when there's an event within the family and reflecting back, and that's when the emotions come up again, that grief, or a place or an aroma for a, particularly for our young people who have very sensory-based needs, then it could be just the smell of something. We can just set that image and that person again.
Do you think we should avoid those triggers, or do you think that we can't avoid them once we've l experienced that grief and bereavement? So, like you said, and we may, like you said, for the children, young people might have a smell that comes up. I'm thinking it might then come out as a behaviour. So I suppose I've almost answered my own question. We can't avoid it, but is it about that awareness and that cascading of information? Because, like you said, the birthday of the loss of a pet or loss of the person is going to be there throughout the young person's life. So is it sometimes about, is there a plan, or that we become aware so we share that information so the young person might be distressed? And as you said about being curious and just thinking, actually, what time of year is this, or was this something that might be re-triggered that's causing this young person who may not be able to verbalise or communicate in a way this has happened, but we're aware, you might need a bit more support tucked around you because it's an anniversary. It's something that's re-triggered, maybe.
Yeah, I think for me, that kind of brings up two elements. I guess there's the thought around continuing bonds. So that's about maintaining that connection. So I think it's really important that those strong bonds with people in their world, and they're encouraged and acknowledge the loss, but foster that continuing bond. For example, saying the name of the person that died, or when you're looking at photos, do you remember when? Or going on a holiday, and perhaps you have a favourite meal or a favourite flavour ice cream, and there's that bringing that person back into their world so that those bonds are always with them. And again, like you're saying about significant times, birthdays, celebrations, you know, turning and thinking, oh, I wonder what your brother would think. Or, yes, so I guess anticipating those times that may have those important elements for that young person, but not avoiding them. I think it is about, yeah, bringing those into conversations, and so those bonds are maintained throughout. And with the plans, I think if initially, I know they're trying to be brought in throughout to run alongside perhaps the HTPs in school. How was that loss experienced? What did it look like? When did it happen? Who was there? What was supportive at that time, or who, or the different elements? And that can be a very sensory-based care plan. So looking at, our different senses and seeing what elements of those assisted with that young person being able to be supported and feel safe and secure through their grieving process. And again, it may not be apparent at that moment. However, later on, maybe a year later, years later, we can reflect back and see and go back to that time and have that awareness and those things can be put into place without having to re-ask, re-question, re-go over the information. Actually, we have the knowledge. Let's integrate this into plans, whether it's educational or life plans generally.
For parents and carers, Danny, do you think about their grief, do you think, is it ever okay if a parent or carer may get upset and the young person with a learning disability may see them, or their sister or brother, is it okay to see them upset? Because sometimes we are talking about those triggers and learning to live with grief, and it wraps around, and we talked about recognizing times where that grief may pop up, and sometimes unexpectedly. Is it ever okay to, oh, mummy's just had a tear or thought or something and share, or in your professional opinion, do you think, oh, we should hide that and go, no, I'm fine? What do you think? And then again, we're talking broadly, but do you think it's ever okay to share, mummy feels sad because, you know, I haven't got my dad or granddad, or my pet may have died and I just remembered. Is it okay, do you think, to ever share that as adults, or are we supposed to be, sometimes it can feel British and stoic?
I think modelling the good grief, if you like, yes, is very supportive for young people. They're able to see in context and be able to accept their own grief too. And I think in that way, that support, that acknowledging and naming that emotion, like you were just saying, I'm upset because, I feel sad because, or I feel angry, I feel frustrated, I feel, so I think modelling our emotions as adults is very supportive for young people, and then perhaps asking them or showing them using their preferred means of communication, is this how you feel? And it may be the same or similar, it may be something different, but being open to have those conversations, and again, giving validity to everything that is experienced.
What do you think, Danny, by having these conversations, what do you hope will start the landscape for changing? I wonder, when you first started this, have you seen a shift in things starting to change and recognise for children and people with a learning disability that actually we are recognising it more? Are you starting to see that we are making a difference by you accessing the training, these conversations? Do you think there is a shift that we're seeing positively around grief and bereavement?
Yeah, again, I think it's on kind of two areas, in the sense of having the conversations initially with all children and parents, being able to speak or even touch on with sensitivity the area of grief and bereavement is very supportive, and with the knowledge that we all share that together, I think, by saying you are not alone in your grief. And I think that is a great role of ours to be able to say enough of that. And I think in that way, that relieves perhaps the loneliness of that for some families, that there are others and there are also professionals that can support, so those people are not alone. And actually, yeah, being aware, I think having that awareness, that curiosity of what that grief may look like, I think it may be easily overlooked just by not having that information initially, not because people want to, but just that natural, yes, unawareness of not realising that this may be so for these young people.
In the theme of the Child Bereavement Network and hope, do you think there is hope for children and young people with a learning disability who experience grief and bereavement, Annie, that life can be hopeful and joyful again for them? Do you believe living, as you said, grief doesn't disappear, but you build round and find that life? Do you believe that's the case for children and young people with a learning disability? If we acknowledge grief and bereavement and what they're experiencing, it doesn't mean that they won't have hope. So if we don't acknowledge it, they'll be okay. If we acknowledge it and validate that, does that mean they can still have hope of a future that can be joyful and happy too? Because it might come really affected, and that might worry parents and carers, because now we've talked about it, now they're unhappy, and will they be okay afterwards? So just wanted your thoughts in that hope theme.
Yes, I think it's being understood. So I think hope for the young people is by understanding who they are, their communication, how they experience that loss, gives them hope for the future. I think it does enable them to return to some of the activities, but not losing connection with the person or the thing that has been lost. And I think that is where that joy for these young people, maintaining those routines, maintaining those familiar things, maintaining what they like, enjoy, what their sensory needs are in relation to that. And it may be a comfort cushion or a pillow to sleep on that connects with that person, or a memory box or some beads that they put together for those memories. And I think that's when having those continuous bonds, but allowing that grief and restoration period, can enable these children to thrive and as families find their way towards hope again.
What has this journey that you're on, Danny, started to teach you, what you didn't see maybe before you started this training, and the incredible work that you're doing? May I just ask, can only ever feel comfortable what you feel, but just wondered what it's, has it changed you? Has it shaped you differently from when you first started this journey, do you think, as a nurse?
I think it's enabled deeper, stronger connections with people. And it's made me realise the value, to a greater extent, of that trusting therapeutic relationship, to know if we have those connections, if we build that trust, then that is where our truth can come through. By speaking our truth and acknowledging our feelings and, yeah, working with that personally, then we can support those of our young people and families, and caring for ourselves too. So in amongst that is, how does this fit for me? Am I caring for me? In which case, then I can support families and young people, and the same for other professionals and other families. So I think it's being able to have those open conversations. So I guess it shaped me in the courage to share, and the courage to be open with others and to receive them at a deeper level. So yeah, I feel I've grown in the sense of just how nourishing and how beautiful this journey can be if we can just be held and supported through it.
Well, that's beautifully put. Thank you for sharing, Danny. There is so much I wanted to ask and talk to you about in this episode. What I'm thinking is I'm going to ask Danny very kindly if she may come back and offer us another episode. I haven't asked Danny, so I'm just going to put her on the spot here while we're doing it, because there's so much I want to talk to Danny about. But I think what I'm going to do is keep it focused where we are today and ask Danny to come on, because I think there's so many spokes with bereavement and grief that I'd like to ask Danny to give more specialist time to be able to share with us and for the listeners. But what I want to do before we start thinking about the closing areas with Danny is, Danny's doing some incredible work with some of the bereavement charities. And I just wanted to be able for Danny to have space to share that, because as Danny's reflected on about making things and resources adaptable, and we're hearing that young people with a learning disability in their own right need that acknowledgement, and I'm very thoughtful of siblings too, and that's why I'm thinking another episode would be really good, because we're taking in the whole family. But just thinking, Danny, what's the incredible pioneering, I would call, the work you're doing with charities in Devon about bereavement? What are you bringing to them to open up resources for children and young people with a learning disability?
I think it's bringing an awareness of our work within our team. So how we've been working and supporting these children and families, how we've highlighted that accessible communication changes everything for them, really accesses their world. Those visual supports, social stories, sensory planning, they're not optional extras, they're essential to life for these young people. And I guess I learned about family systems of change after a loss, and how services need to be flexible and passionate. And it allows me to acknowledge how the resilience of families is really important, and having that community-based support. And I think by working in conjunction with the charities that exist already, we can support them and they can support us. And we can acknowledge where those, if you like, want for a better word, gaps are in supporting these young people. And they can share with us the resources that they have, and we can adapt them to meet the needs of our young people. That is just so important.
That is just well. And what I love there is that you said essential, Danny. This isn't an option. Like you said, every child has that right, and you are part of making that happen. The part now that we look at, when I am privileged to have professionals, parents, carers, young people who will be coming on the podcast, is just thinking about words that you would like to impart. And that's what I'd like to ask you, Danny. Do you have some words you would like to be able to offer to any parents and carers who have been able to listen to this podcast today, please?
I think the words, I'd like to share when supporting a young person with learning or intellectual disability through grief, I think it takes time, trust and connection. And I think it is, like you mentioned before, it's about being alongside them with care, curiosity and compassion, sometimes with words, but sometimes just simply our presence. But just as children need care, parents and carers need to care too. So reaching out for that support, like we're sharing here, is not a weakness. Knowing it's our strength, that support is our strength. We cannot pour from an empty cup, and parents, carers, professionals all deserve the same compassion that they give freely to others. So I think it's taking a deep breath, being gentle with yourself, take moments to talk, to rest, and supporting a grieving child begins with a cared for adult. And I think together with our learning disability team, being here for you, to walk alongside you, to listen, and to keep developing ways to support children, families and professionals through grief and loss, so that we can help young people and families find their way towards hope again.
Wow, that is, feel quite emotional listening to that, Danny. That's the most beautiful, well thought, considerate, validating words that you have chosen to describe an area that can be incredibly difficult and heartbreaking to navigate. Thank you. May I ask, Danny, have you got any words for professionals who may be listening and may have found themselves in this journey with a young person? And again, I appreciate we are not giving individual advice. It's broad, but just your thoughts that you could share, we would very much welcome.
I think at the beginning of that is about that care for, like we express for others. So care for yourself and care for your team and the others within it. And I think it is very important. And I think particularly disability nurses tend to do well because it's that listening first. We're not going to be able to fix that. It's not what we're here to fix. We've to fix anything, but to understand. And I think it's using clear, concrete language, visual supports that will make that difference. And making a simple shared grief support plan, the things that are essential to that young person, and prioritising your own training resources, but mainly looking and caring for yourself so that you can be there for others.
Yeah, again, thank you, Danny. I think that, yeah, just gives confidence to me if I was a professional listening that it's okay. It's one about looking after yourself, but two, I like the sounds of the grief plan. We're acknowledging and we're thinking what we can do. I'd like to finally close by the most important, but just we keep our children and young people at the centre. And I just would love to hear, Danny, for the children and young people with a learning disability who may have tuned into this podcast, what would you like to say to them, Danny? What would your message be to them, please?
I think it's that they do not have to do this alone. That together, all of us, by leaning on love, support and compassion, that they can carry their grief with safety and meaning. And I think for the children to know that they are loved and it's okay to feel sad or confused, and that the people around you will support you and help you and guide you and hold this as you process your grief and your journey forwards.
Wow. I can't thank you enough, Danny, for all that you're bringing, for you to be able to have shared so much within this podcast episode. For someone who has experienced and lives with grief, I am incredibly grateful for what you do, and there is a comfort I can feel in how you talk and that support. And I'm incredibly passionate for the children and young people we have in being able, as you said at this beginning, making sure that we validate, we hear, we support, we love, we connect, and we support the families, the carers around them, the professionals, as you said, to have the confidence to be able to go in and be there and be present and alongside grief and bereavement. And thanks to you, Danny, coming on, we've just opened up a conversation that may not have been possible without this podcast and yourself. So I'd like to say thank you. Really would like you to come back on and think about some specialist areas. We might have some of our listeners who may have areas they'd like to consider with you. I know you've kindly shared that you'll be able to share some resources, which will go on our website. And what would you finally, just after someone's maybe listened to this podcast, it may have brought up some emotions and feelings. What would you say, Danny, to whoever in our podcast world has listened today? Would you maybe give some advice to maybe think about if they need to take care of themselves and it may have resurfaced some feelings? You just got some words of advice you may offer.
I think it's about reconnecting with the things that are of value to you, that bring you comfort. Call them that compassion care kit. Are there some things that you can find around you, often associated with the senses, that bring that softening? And being able to talk to somebody that you trust as well, being able to share that, to know that you're not alone, and to have those conversations as feels comfortable for you. yeah, just taking that time out, whether it be outside in nature, taking a breath, taking a pause in life, and knowing that there are people, and we can put those links to resources and to websites that can support you further if needed. So it is, yeah, taking care, taking time, taking a breath, and just being with how you are and acknowledging that.
Yeah, I keep saying thank you. Fun, thank you. Thank you so much, Danny. And I really look forward to you joining me on future podcasts where we can maybe deep dive a bit more into other areas and how we can support. Because I found you incredibly helpful and thought-provoking in what you have shared. So thank you.
No, thank you. It's been a real honour. Wonderful to be able to share that with you too, Janice. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.